Well, I'm really glad to be here. I feel a little awkward. I read the list of speakers you've had up to this point, and I'm somewhat like a tadpole in a pond of big fish or something here. I don't have the credentials that they do. And I think one of the advantages of these speakers that have come earlier is tremendous years of experience that I don't have. I've only been in a ministry in the Navigators on my own, or out in a Navigator-type ministry for 4 years. Had 2 years at the University of California at Irvine, and then 2 years now at Cal Poly up in San Luis Obispo. And so I don't have a tremendous amount of experience like Walter and Scott or Cal Guy or, you know, Dr. Cal Guy or some of these people. I just don't have the background. So a lot of the things that I'll share with you today, as the guy says, you know, they're firmly set in putty. And so you might be able to, if I came back tomorrow, I might change a few of them, you know. But what I would like to share with you is that there's some of the things that I have learned from other people, augmented them to some to what we're doing or to our situation, implemented them, tried them, worked with them. Some of it worked, some of it hasn't worked for me. And so I've changed it around a little bit. But what I will share with you, we are doing or trying to do, and it has been successful to a degree. And we do currently operate on this basis. I'd also like to say that that I can stand up here and tell you what we're doing in San Luis Obispo on a campus or a couple of campuses out there and really make it sound good. And I can tell you that this guy did this, or we had this mentality, or the principles by which we function are these, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you can come out there and visit us, and you'll see, just like in any other place, it's just nothing but a bag of worms. And that's true. You know, some things we do happen to be right, and about 2% of the things we do produce 98%, and 98% of the things we do produce about 2%. And so, as in any other place, that's true of our place also. Now, I was talking to a guy last week on this same topic, and he heads our work up in Arizona. And I was down in New Mexico with a gang of people covering these same topics. And after about 3 days there, this guy came up to me and said, you know, I'd really like to come out to San Luis Obispo and spend about a week with you out there just to see what you guys are doing. I thought, oh, no. I've told him about all these things, and he's kind of got excited about it. Now he's going to come out and find out what it's really like. So, but be encouraged if you can see a beam of light and if you can see some progress in what you're doing. The whole ministry, you know, Jim Peterson came out to our campus, and he left, and we invited him out to speak on demon possession, and because the movie The Exorcist had just come out, and the Time Magazine and Newsweek and several others had written some tremendous articles on it, and the book was out and sold something like 7 million copies or something like that, and so there was such a fever about this thing called demon possession and exorcisms that we had Jim Peterson, who has himself cast out demons down in Brazil, we had him come out and speak on the topic in the dorms and campus-wide meetings and this type of thing. Well, Jim was out at our place for about 4 or 5 days, and he left. Went back to the Glen and told him that San Luis Obispo was the best college ministry he'd seen in the United States. So, you know, I thought about that, and I thought, well, you know, he saw a few things that he liked. And about a week later, I got a letter from a guy telling me what it was just an active young people's group running around like a bunch of idiots, and it wasn't really producing anything. You know, I got those within just about a couple of weeks of each other, you know, from the greatest to the worst. Well, the thing about it is both of them are right. You know, we do some things we are doing and working, and some things we're doing not working. And so what I'd like to share with you this morning is just a few concepts and a few things that we are doing, and perhaps it'll help you on your campus. But I want to say right now that by no means is this the way to do it. I mean, you take this and you go back and you implement this at your place, and smooth sailing, giant production from that point on. It just won't work. I remember one time I had the giant privilege of being Leroy Iams' assistant for 2 years. Hardest 2 years of my life, and also the best, two of the best years of my life, being with Leroy. Leroy has the uncomfortable habit of asking a man to do more than the guy thinks he can do, and he does this rather consistently, and so you always just feel like you're like you're one man going up against 1,000. And just about time God pulls this miraculous thing and you wipe all those out, Leroy says, well, by the way, check the left, there's another 1,000. You know, you just continually work this way with Lee. And a very stretching experience. But Lee told me one time that he feels that when a guy goes into a campus, he has to adapt his ministry to his own thing, the way he goes about things, his philosophy of life, and so forth. And so I remember at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and the guy that was sent up there, that went up there and had a tremendous ministry, was Dean Trobe. Now Dean was kind of a let it all hang out type of guy, you know, beard, and I mean he'd show up for a staff meeting and he looked like he just stepped, you know, in out of the peach field or something. You know, that guy looked like a bum, you know, old clod boots and blue jeans with holes in them and a sweater that was about 9 sizes too big for him. You know, he'd just kind of slumber in and fall into the nearest couch, and you know, there he'd be. But he'd wade around among those hippies up there in Colorado and just, man, they'd just fall all over him. And they'd all go skiing for a weekend and have a blast, and you know, and good night, they'd preach the gospel, roaring down the slopes and everything, and God really blessed that, you know. Well, had he gone to Colorado State University, which is basically an engineering agricultural school, the guy would have fallen flat on his face. He just, you know, he couldn't adapt it to that, or had he gone, he'd have had to undergo a tremendous adaptation. So you just kind of have to take a campus and adapt that thing to your own personality, your own lifestyle, your own kind of way of doing things. And don't be ashamed to do that. You have to operate in accordance to what you are. And there's a certain degree of, you know, you do have to adapt, you do have to change. We went to the University of California at Irvine, and there are 9 University of Californias in California, and all of them are tend to be a little more liberal, a little more toward the radical side. You know, they're the ones that a few years ago burned all the banks and turned over the cars and all this type of thing, you know. And we went there for 2 years to one of these universities and had a good ministry. We started from scratch, didn't know a single person when we walked on campus, just the wife and I. And then a few months later, a girl named Patty Johnson came out to be our girls' worker. And so Patty and I basically went out day after day, night after night, and hit that campus. And just it was just like driving your head against a wall. But we stayed with it and prayed like crazy, and many, many, many long, long walks, and just wrestling with some things with the Lord. But as a result of that, at the end of 2 years, we had 18 people who were, 22 people who were totally committed to what we were trying to do on that campus. Starting from zero, we wound up with 22. Well, then they transferred us from that up to Cal Poly, and Cal Poly is, you know, kind of the milieu of California and Cal College, and so we went up there and got with the Aggies and the Goat Ropers, and so we had to kind of change hats, you know, but we were able to do that. We shifted back and, you know, drug out all the old Texas A&M gear and put it on and took off, you know? And here we go again. So you do have to adapt, in another sense, too, you just adapt the situation to yourself. You are a certain way. I remember Scotty one time, we were in a situation at the Glen, and a wife stood up and asked, talking to Scotty. Don't ever do this to Scotty, by the way. But she said, now, you're talking about going overseas, and Scotty, you know, talking about taking on the Asian mentality and this type of thing. And the girl stood up and said, well, why can't you just live like yourself and just be yourself? And, you know, I mean, I was raised in America. I grew up in America. Why can't I just be, you know, what I've been trained to be and et cetera? Why can't I just be that overseas? And she said, when does all that come in? Why can't I be that way? And Scotty said, well, I'm not sure there's any merit in being the way you've been raised to be if people are going to hell because of it. Well, see, that's, you don't ever ask Scotty questions like that, but... So you do have to change. You know, if the way you are is turning people off, then maybe you'll change. See? If the way you are, people are not adapting, you know, if it just doesn't work, if it's a square peg in a round hole, then change. Let me just give you, you know, before we get into this topic of leadership here a little bit, let me just share with you a brief testimony. I became a Christian when I was a junior in high school. Living in a town called Minden, Louisiana. The fellow that totally influenced me and had the greatest impact on my before Christ days was a fellow by the name of David Evans, who was a fellow student in high school. David had become a Christian between his sophomore and junior year at Glorieta, New Mexico, at a, you know, a little thing that summer. And he'd become a Christian. When he came back to high school his junior year, he was a completely different person. And the whole high school, the high school wasn't too big, about 600 students, something like that. Wasn't too big, and the whole senior class, about 160 or so of us, realized that David had really changed. He was a different guy. And I noticed it, and I watched him closely, and in a sense admired his life, but wrestled with the concept of whether or not that's what I would like to be myself. I couldn't buy that when I was having too much fun the other way. I had some very, very ugly habits in my life. I'd worked with road construction crews every summer. My dad owns a road construction business, and the things that those guys talk about, their goals in life and this type of thing, aren't really edifying. And I learned that. And even the bad thing about it, the terrible thing about it, is to me that developed a concept of manliness, because these men were really men. They were rugged. And they worked on this rough equipment all day under the hot, blazing sun, and they did a tremendous amount of work. And they really gave of themselves physically. And to me, they were real men. And because they were men and I wanted to be a man, I thought that what the way they lived and the things they said and the thoughts that they had were the way to be. I mean, I thought that was manly. And a violent temper, I thought, man, that's just part of it. A guy who can really get upset, or a guy who can really talk ugly, or a guy who can really put another guy down is really a man. And I grew up for years and years and years with these concepts of manliness. And so when I did become a Christian, I really started from way down in the hole. I really did. But David was the guy that really influenced me. And amazing thing about it, I picked up a hitchhiker here just coming up here the other day and shared with my testimony with a guy and talked about it a little bit. And as I just reflected back on it then, the amazing thing to me that happened in my life was my language. And one day, you know, I must, hundreds and hundreds of very filthy words would come out of my mouth daily. And the day I became a Christian, the next day was the last day I ever cursed. You know, just the fact that God would do something totally radical like that in my life, it was abhorrent in my sight to say some of the words that the day before I had said hundreds without even flinching. But God did begin to change my life, and it was a definite conversion experience. I was converted by the way of playing baseball. I was out in the middle of center field practicing baseball one afternoon and began to reflect back on some of the things that David had shared. And we'd had a revival in our home church. And, of course, I only went to church when Mother caught me. I just couldn't hardly take that Sunday school bit. But she'd catch me sneaking out some Sunday mornings and I'd have to go. But I never had really cared much for church. But David invited me to go to a revival, and I went. And for the first time in my life, I understood what the guy was saying. It made sense to me. And all through that week, I heard the guy preach. And then, of course, what would happen after the guy would speak that night is David and another guy named Pat, whom he had led to Christ, and myself would all get in David's car, and we'd go out and get a milkshake, and you know how you drive all over town and just talk, see? And I was kind of the guy in the back seat, and those two were in the front seat, and they would explain to me what this guy had said, and then they'd kind of slip in a little possible application every now and then I might ought to make, like becoming a Christian, you know? And so we did that all week. The next week, out in center field, I began to think about all this, and it all came back to me, and I finally asked myself the question, you know, Chuck, are you a Christian? And I thought, well, I don't know. I belong to church. Yeah, but... And then I began to think about my life, and I reflected back on my lifestyle, the things that I said, and my motives, the books that I read, just the way I live my life day by day. And I thought, boy, you know, I remember the thought came to my mind is that my life in reality is no different from a guy who has never even heard the word church. And it was no different. That was a very shocking realization for me, but that was true. My life in reality as the way I live day by day was absolutely no different from a guy who had never even heard of a church. So then I asked myself the question, well, then why don't you become one? And then I began to reflect back on what David had suffered, and not real bad, but, you know, just the little jokes every now and then, the nicknames that you pick up, like, you know, deacon and preacher and holy boy and all this stuff, you know, that you pick up. And how that you're the brunt of some jokes and this type of thing. But anyway, I reflected back on all that, didn't know if I wanted to go through all that or not, and I knew David had stopped cheating, and that was going to be tough, and so it was, you know, I reflected back on all that, and it was going to be culture shock to me, you know, but I remember thinking, you know, that if God could roll back those clouds and point his finger down at me and say, you know, there's a guy that really pleases me by the way he lives, I wanted that more than I wanted anything else. And so, just standing there in center field, I prayed and asked the Lord if he'd take over my life. You know, I mean, I prayed something like, God, I don't know if I'm a Christian. I'm not even sure I know what one is, but if I've never given my life to you, I'm going to do that right now. And immediately, the Lord took me up on that. I remember the sensation that I had standing out there in center field. I just felt so free and so liberated that I was just looking around, and behind me was this center field wall about 15 feet high, and I just knew I could leap that thing. I just knew I could. I just felt so liberated and so free just after that little prayer that I prayed. Well, you know, some of the bad habits began to go, and very fortunately that we had a home church there, First Baptist of Menin, that had a tremendous youth program. The pastor's wife took a very active role in it. She had two teenage daughters, and so then she was very involved in the youth work there. We had a group that met on Sunday afternoons called the LSU, Louisiana State. You know, it was a life service union. And every Sunday afternoon, about 2 o'clock, we'd all gather down at the church, about 20 of us, and we had this life service union. And we'd go out and and do certain projects. We'd go to, you know, visit some people that had been sick that week, or we'd go down to the jail. Or I mean, one time we built big signs and we put them out on the highway, you know, welcome to Minden, you know, and big picture of a church, you know, First Baptist Church, and we'd have a big deal, you know. And we'd do stuff like that together, and it was a good situation. But one thing that they did is they stuck a... I began to go to training union. Can you believe going to church at night? I began to go to church every night. I mean, every Sunday night. And so anyway, a guy stuck a little quarterly in my hand and said, here, now this is a training union quarterly. Now you read this thing before you come. So I did. And he said, now over in the back, see this over there? These are things we call daily Bible readings. And he said, now you read those things every night before you go to bed. And you see these guys down here, well, these are missionaries, and I think they have their birthday today. And you say, you pray for those missionaries. Oh, okay. And so I went home, and I think for the next 2 or 3 years, I don't think I ever missed a night when I didn't take out my Bible, and I'd read a little 10, 12, 20 verses of Scripture, something like that. And I'd pray. I'd get out on my knees, and I'd pray for every one of those missionaries by name. And never heard of any of them, and, you know, probably never will have the chance to meet any of them, but I just prayed for these missionaries. I remember one night I went to bed, and I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, just like a bolt of lightning. I just jumped up, and I forgot to do my Bible reading. And I just woke up like that, turned on the light, and got out my Bible and you know, read through it, and I think probably hastily, and prayed for the guy on my knees, and I prayed for those guys. But that was about the only help that I really got in my last year and a half in high school, was those little daily Bible readings and praying for those missionaries. And then the fellowship of the gang is very good fellowship. I went off to Louisiana College. It was a Baptist school, pretty small, about 1,000 people. Very good fellowship, good people. Some people down there, you know, that just, as I think back on it now, if they could just got some help. You know, they were so hungry for help. Many of them remind me of the situation that you're in now, just hungry for help and eager to serve God and be pleasing unto God. But about the only thing we could do was go to some of our Bible classes, and then some of the guys used to go down the streets and witness and take tracts and pass out tracts and go to the jails and this type of thing. And they'd come by and invite me to go with them, and I'd always go if I could possibly get it in. But you know, as far as, I remember one time a guy came by my room, a fellow named Jimmy Abbott, and came by and he handed me a little packet. I had some verses in it, wanted me to memorize those, told me it really helped me. And as I thought back on it years later, that was a beginning with Christ back, little B rations. And being faithful like I am, I didn't memorize them. But that was years ago, and but he tried to help me to memorize a few verses. Somebody had helped him. And there were about a half a dozen guys down there that, I mean, I really admired and honored. And these guys really walked with the Lord, tremendous people, tremendous students. But I didn't get a lot of help. I remember when I was my second year down at Louisiana College, I read my New Testament for the first time in my life. I sat down one time and decided I'd read 3 chapters a night till I got to the New Testament, and I did that. First time in my life I'd ever even read the New Testament. I'd been a Christian over 3 years. I went to Glorieta 3 times, and each time the Lord really spoke to me out of Glorieta. I had some tremendous times with the Lord out there. A good place. But one time when I was out at Glorieta, I think the Lord really dealt with me about missions. And I think we're stuck with this concept right now that if you're going to really serve the Lord, you've got to be full-time. And either a pastor or a missionary or something like this. And I've thought some on that, why that concept has so invaded our mentality, our thinking, is that if we're going to really serve the Lord, why do we have to be full-time? But that was my concept. Now, if I can digress here just a little bit, I think the reason that we think that is because we just don't see laymen who are really producing for Christ. And so you think if you are going to produce, and many of us in this room today have a tremendous desire to produce for the Lord. We want to be used in His work. And the only people that we see are doing this are those who are full-time. And so we immediately think, if I'm going to produce something for the Lord, I've got to be full-time. When in reality, I don't think that's always been the pattern in Christian history. Now, I'm not enough an authority in the area to say that. You might could ask Scotty or Dr. Calgary or somebody like this about that. But I don't believe that that's always been the pattern for the people who did the majority of the production in Christian circles were the professionals. I know that Jim Peterson refers to us as freaks, the guys who have to be full-time. He refers to us as freaks, oddballs, you know, but the fantastic majority of the work, it should be done by the guy who kind of has the 8-to-5. But I think that's the reason that we just don't see many laymen who are really producing, and therefore we don't desire to be a very productive, godly layman, because we just don't see any examples of it. So I really felt that the Lord was leading me into mission work out there, and I got some time with a fellow. I think his name was Bill Cody, Dr. Bill Cody. Does anybody ever remember a guy in a Southern Baptist work by the name of Bill Cody? And I think that was his name. And I got some time with him one afternoon, and he asked me what kind of missionary I'd like to be. And that's new to me. I didn't know there was more than one. So, But he said that you could be many kinds, and he asked me what I liked, and I told him, well, one of the things I liked was agriculture. And so he said, well, why don't you become an agricultural missionary? There's a tremendous need for them, particularly in South America. So that really clicked with me, and so he asked me, does your school have an agricultural department? I said, no. He said, well, why don't you transfer to one? I thought, it's a good idea. Where should I go? He said, well, I'd recommend Texas A&M. So I said, fine. And from that minute, I was going to Texas A&M. Never even heard of the place. Didn't know where it was. Didn't know a thing about it. You know, Texas A&M, all right, here I go. And so I determined, that was it. There was no more counsel needed. I didn't need any time in prayer, you know, get leading from the Word. That was it. I'm going to Texas A&M and major in agriculture. So I did. Oh, Lord. So I transferred over to that God-forsaken place. And for a whole semester, I just really struggled. I mean, you know, you come from sweet little old Louisiana college, you know, and all the people are warm and friendly, and you know half of the campus, and you walk to class, and everybody you pass, and man, you just, everybody's so friendly and sweet and nice, and you know, and you have 2 or 3 dates a week, because you got to go to prayer meeting, you know, and you got to go to Sunday night church, so you might as well have fun doing it, and we'd all, 6 or 8 of us would all get in the car and roll off, and it was just fantastic. You know, I wasn't growing a whole lot, but I was enjoying it. But anyway, I got over to Texas A&M, and the first night I got there, I got there a day early. For some reason, I thought that'd be a good idea. And I got there one afternoon, and the day before we registered, and I went into my room, and it was just filthy. I mean, cigarette butts all over the floor, junk, dirt, about 25 or 30, just old filthy drugstore-type books on this guy's desk over there, you know, and the place was just a mess. And so my mother and father had gone down there with me, and so my mother had she was carrying something up in my room, you know, and so we walked in the door and plopped this down, and my brother walked in and saw this horrible hole I was about to live in, you know. I don't know, I bet she prayed all the way home, but that night about midnight, my roommate came in and crawled in the bed, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, he vomited all over my clothes and shoes, you know. And I thought, well, welcome to A&M, you know. It was terrible, you know. Well, you just got to love it. Well, anyway, down at A&M, that whole year, you know, I witnessed to the guys across the shower. You know, we had sweet mates and a couple of rough guys across the shower, and I witnessed to those guys and shared my testimony, and I thought, you know, if I really ought to live a Christian life before these guys, and every night I'd get down on my knees by my chair before I went to bed, and I'd pray. And I'd pray for these guys and pray for my family and some different people I'd met, and then I'd get up and, you know, go to bed, and these guys kind of, I got to be buddy friends with them and buddies with them, this type of thing, and we'd kind of work out with weights, and occasionally we'd go down and get a Coke, and maybe get a beer and stuff, and I became buddies, and I'd share my testimony, but you know, just nothing happened. It was a very frustrating year, a semester, and just really rough, and I think what God did during that semester was that He revealed to me very vividly just how shallow I really was. And I'd been a Christian for 4 years, and yet in reality I was so shallow that I knew almost nothing about the Christian life. I was very unvictorious, very inconsistent, a giant heart. I felt like I really wanted to serve and follow the Lord, but it's like Paul says in Romans 7, I wanted to do these things, but I wound up doing the opposite. And I just, it was ached. And that year was very, very hard and very revealing. And I determined after that I was going to transfer. I was not coming back. Well, about a month before I got out of that semester, by the way, this was the spring semester, and about a month before I got out, a fellow by the name of Don Whitehall, who was in the BSU there, and I went to BSU every day, and Don came by and asked me if I'd like to listen to a tape. And I went by his room and listened to his tape, and it was a tape by Max called The Possibilities of a Life. By the way, this past year out at Cal Poly, although I have more responsibility, I'm maintaining, you know, kind of a little finger over here in the grassroots. I have my little Bible study, my little group. And I was teaching a Sunday school class down at the church, and I decided I'd really like to get next to some of these guys, and I invited them over to my house to listen to a tape. And guess what tape we listened to? You know, same one, Possibilities of a Life by Max. And here it was, you know, 10 years ago that I first listened to that tape. But I listened to that tape, and I was just dumbfounded. I was just startled. I couldn't believe it. That here was a guy that everything he said just so fitted, you know, my need and my wants and my desires. And so I asked Don a little bit later on if I could listen to it again. I went by and listened to it again one Sunday afternoon. And in fact, I think before that month was up, I'd listened to it 4 times. It just so met my need. The last time I listened to it, after I took my last final was in entomology. Just a giant ripper. Oh, what a bear. But But I took this final and went to Don. I'd asked Don to set the tape up, and when I got out of my final, I went straight to his room, took out my notebook, and copied down the tape word for word. Can you believe that? Word for word. And I mean, I was desperate, you know. So, and that's the only thing I'd ever heard. It really made such an impact on my life. So on the way home, I remember Max talked about, you know, just somewhere in there, he mentioned going out and praying and ask God to do something in your life. So on the way home, I prayed, now, Lord, I'd really like to be used of you this summer, and I'd really like to be, you know, to get to know you this summer and this type of thing. And I said, I'd just like to go out in the field someplace and pray, but I'm in a hurry. I want to get on home. I found out later on I'm kind of a choleric, and, you know, that explains why I just always going. But I'm on my way home. I don't want to stop and turn around. You got to show me a road that just kind of peels off, you know, so I can see it ahead of time and take a side road and go off down some road and find me a pasture and pray. About a mile later, you know, there it was, just laying right upside the road, you know, and giant signs. I couldn't have missed a thing. And so I peeled off and went down this old gravel road in East Texas and drove down the road a couple of miles and stopped and got out, took my Bible, and went out in the middle of a pasture and just sat down. And the pasture was uninhibited, and that was good. And so I went out there, and one of the verses that Max had shared with me on the tape was Jeremiah 33:3, and I'd memorized that verse, first verse I ever memorized, Jeremiah 33:3. I don't even think I could have quoted you John 3:16, but I went out there, and I turned to Jeremiah 33:3, and I just read it, and then I went back to Jeremiah 32:17 and 27, and I read over those, and I prayed that God would really use me that summer. Well, I went home that summer, and it was a tremendous summer. I think I spoke probably about twice a week that summer to some group. Just everything, every time I would say something and share with them, it would really meet their needs. And people, in a sense, I was in a tremendous demand that summer. But you know what happened? Is that because I wasn't feeding myself and getting in the Word on my own, I soon ran dry. Now, the month of August was just agony. June and July were tremendous. August was agony. One thing I had done is I'd taken me a little notebook and stuck it up at the head of my bed, and I would, as I go through my Bible at night, I could find some of these verses that I'd underlined during the time that I'd been reading the New Testament back at Louisiana College. And I went through and I began to memorize some of those verses. And I memorized about 60 or 70 verses or something that summer, just from those. And I didn't write them down. I just made a list of the ones I'd memorized, because I didn't know you're supposed to have cards and all that stuff. And so I just wrote down the references, and I would memorize it. When I'd go to bed at night, I'd pick up my little notebook, and I'd go down through those and see if I could quote some of those that I just had written down, you know, like John 3:16 and 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17 and stuff like that. And I'd just see if I could quote it. Well, when I got back to 8 a.m., I remember I got a bunch of catalogs. I was not going back to 8 a.m. So I got all these catalogs and spread them all over the dining room table. And I tried to take my curriculum and fit it into this one, that wouldn't work. And I tried this one and that one. None of them would work. And I almost had a half dozen schools there. So I finally said, well, no. All of a sudden the thought came to me, you know, didn't I lead you to Texas A&M? Why are you trying to go someplace else? I thought, oh, yeah, that's right. So I guess I'll go back then. So slammed up all the catalogs, threw them away, packed my clothes a week or so, a few days later, and went back to Texas A&M. Got back down there. First of all, my room that I was signed up for and my roommate, something happened to that. So I lost my roommate and I lost my room. Par for the course. Good old A&M. So I got stuck in a room with four guys, you know, just a huge room, you know. And I went to register. I couldn't get it. All my classes were filled, you know, everything. Just total frustration. So I was nuts. So I walked out of it and went over to the BSU. And I'm just going to go over there, get my head back, put back together and think and rest and calm down and come back and hit it again. So I went over there and I sat down in the BSU library. And I'm sitting there just kind of resting. And Don Whitehall walks in. Oh, Don, how you doing? You know, had a good summer. Yeah, okay. And a few minutes later, this old tall, slim, bony guy walks in, and I knew that it was Max. I just knew that it was Max. It just happened that he was on his way to Southwest Texas State College or someplace down in San Marcos. And Don had, I think, had shared with Max that I'd memorized a few verses that summer. So Max said, hey, would you like to go to San Marcos with me this weekend? Would I like to go to San Moses, you know? I tell you, the guy was like, delivered. I mean, so I said, well, I'm not registered. I'm not registered. And he said, well, you go over and see if you can get registered, and if you can, meet me over here in the morning at 8 o'clock at the BSU, and we'll go down to San Marcos. So I went over, I thought, okay. So I went over to start registering, and just as I walked in the door, a new section, I didn't know anything about how they did it, but a new section had just been, a new time zone had just come, and they let a new section in, opened up all the classes. I finished registering in about 15 minutes. everything. Just walked up, signed up every class I wanted, got it, went in, paid my bill, and walked out. 15 minutes. Oh, wow, that's something. And then I went to my room and got all my gear squared away, and I'd forgotten my alarm clock. Oh, nuts. So I said, Lord, I'd really like to go tomorrow, but if I'm going, you got to wake me up at, and you got to get me up at 7 o'clock, right on the dot. Didn't know anything about a quiet time. So 7 o'clock, you know. So I said, you got to wake me up at 7 o'clock. I need to get up about 7 or to get up and, you know, get shaved and get over there. And the next morning, on the money, 7 o'clock, I looked down. It was right on the dot. I thought, good night. So I roared out of bed, got all dressed, and I went. I got a fish, about 10 minutes late. The first time in my life I was ever early, and I probably the last. But I got over there and went with Max to San Marcos. And that, boy, I tell you, that was something. I should have known something was up because it wasn't his Volkswagen. And the guy who owned the Volkswagen sat in the back seat. And Max drove, and I sat in the front seat. I should have known something was up. But anyway, all the way down, Max, he nearly killed us about 10 times. Because what he'd do, he'd say, now listen, you open the Bible. And he'd tell me where. And then he'd point. He'd say, okay. Now he'd lean over and say, okay, now read that one right there. And then he would get back on the road. And I would read it, and he'd tell me what it meant. And so he's going to read that one, and I'd read it. And all the way to San Marcos, we did that. You know, he'd point, and I'd read, and he'd explain it. And it was a turning point in my life. It was a turning point in my life. And so about 3 weeks after that, of course, Mike was in Dallas at the time. He was just passing through. And about 3 weeks later, a fellow came to campus by the name of Bill Gibbs, and Bill was with the Navigators. And I met Bill. We used to call him the Stump, a little short guy. And I met Bill, but a semester later, I had the priceless privilege of living with Bill for a year in Hart Hall there at Texas A&M. And I watched this man get up in the morning and spend that time with God. And I watched him, you know, as he would get out on his knees and pray. And I watched him as he studied. And I remember some nights he'd stay up to 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning because he had a rough one the next day. And then, but before he'd go to bed, he'd walk out and review some verses. And he'd go out and sit down on the street or lean up against a lamppost and review some verses and pray and just spend some time with God. And I thought, good night, what a heart for God this guy's got. And I noticed the way he kept his room and just the immaculate way the guy lived. And every area of his life was so sharp. I was totally impressed. And just rooming with this guy was so healthy for me. I had a Paul, you know, somebody I could follow. By the way, we often preach these messages, you know, where's your Timothy? Where's your Timothy? But, you know, you really need to turn that around occasionally and say, now, where's your Paul? Where's the guy that you're really drawing from? Well, these guys became my Paul. And I kept in touch with Max, correspondence, and he'd write me a postcard every now and then. And on the bottom of it, he had about half a dozen verses, you know, just all kind of verses all over the bottom of his postcard. And I look them all up and I memorize them all. And the scripture memory had so helped me. And but that's where the Christian life really turned around for me. And those 2 years, those last 2 years I spent at Texas A&M, you know, I look back on those were just some of the richest, most fantastic times of my life. The warmest, sweetest memories of my life, you know, back in Texas A&M. And, you know, I didn't have any dates. But, you know, well, I think I had 2 dates in about 2.5 years, something like that, you know. But, you know, it's just, you know, somehow you just didn't, the longing and the need. Well, I'd get lonely, but the desire for the, it just wasn't there. Just one of those almost naturally imposed drought times that was just so good to me. And the guys, you know, we'd get so much fun together, go out and play football. Every time it rained, we'd always go play football because we'd get muddy that way, you know. And we just have a blast. A bunch of old rugged, grody old Aggies, you know, but we loved God and it was so good. And the basics became the basics to me at that time. And it was so rich. Just every morning I'd get up and spend time with the Lord. Every morning. Boy, just memorize a verse every morning. Get up. I did it this morning. Last night before I went to bed, I wrote my verse out. And this morning when I got up, I memorized it while I was shaving. I used to do that at Texas A&M. I remember one time I memorized 100 verses in 100 days shaving. You know, just my face was horrible, but the verses were there. You know, looked like the old boy called Hatchet Face, you know, looked like he'd been in a hatchet fight and everybody had a hatchet but him. But that's where it really, I graduated from Texas A&M and joined the Marine Corps. And that was some fantastic time too. God, I think, revealed during the Marine Corps, I was on my own most of the time. Spent a year in Vietnam. Had a combat outfit, a platoon, and had some good time. Led some of those guys to Christ. Led an old guy to Christ named J.F. Janachowski, an old Czechoslovakian machine gunner we had. Good night, he was as wide as he was tall, just sheer muscle. Old ski, you know, and he'd carry that machine gun. It weighs about 25 pounds, you know. And he carried his machine gun, you know. an old ski, you know, he became a Christian out on the hill 59 one day. I had Sunday school service one Sunday morning out there. I was the company chaplain, you know. I was probably the only guy that's a Christian, but anyway, I was the company chaplain. And so we were out on patrol and way out in the boonies, and I decided that Sunday morning we were going to have church. So we were in kind of a little perimeter there, and we all got together on a little hill, and I shared the bridge with them or something. I don't know what it was. But old Ski came up to me later, and he said, you know, Lieutenant, I don't really know what you're talking about there. So I explained it to him and clearly, and I shared with him, you know, Ski, if you'd really like to know the Lord, I just suggest you just kind of take a little short walk here and just pray about that, you know, and just give your life to the Lord. And he did that. Came back about 30 minutes later, and he's really intense guy, and he came up and said, you know, Lieutenant, he said, you know, I did that. And he said, I feel different, Lieutenant. He's really a tremendous fellow. Old Ski, he really, tremendous times there in the Marine Corps, but I was on my own so much. And I think the Lord revealed to me during that time that you really need some more help. And so I came back from Vietnam, and I got married just before I went over to Vietnam, about 6 months before I left. When I came back, our first child had been born. She was about 8 months old when I got back. And so I married and had a family then, and I had some problems in my marriage. You know, I was a very intense guy, a very success-oriented individual, and the Marine Corps demands a phenomenal amount out of their people. That's one thing I like about it, is because they demand, audaciously demand your life, and anything less, they expect nothing less. That's one thing I liked about it, and because they usually get it, and a good outfit that way. But anyway, I'd work 12, 14 hours a day. Was probably gone all night at least twice a week, either on maneuvers or just had too much work to do. We just stayed up all night and worked on it. But it was very hard on the marriage, and so much to do, and I was so preoccupied by my job. And well, anyway, I got a letter from Leroy Iams. He invited me to come to Colorado Springs and get some more training, and the wife and I prayed about that and decided to do that. We went to Colorado Springs, and that's where I went into those two real rough years with Leroy. Best years, but rough years. And spent 2 years there with Leroy as his assistant. Tremendous concepts built in my life at that time. And then after that, they sent us out for our first ministry assignment at the University of California, Irvine. And we went out there and beat our heads against the wall. Boy, that was a tough nut to crack. But the Lord did that, you know. The Lord cracked that thing, but he did it his own way and at his own speed. And I remember I went out there and I was going to tear that place up. I was going to get out there and get those heathen. I had all these objectives. Man, I was going to... But, you know, things didn't happen like I wanted them to happen. They didn't. And my wife told me later on, you know, she said, Chuck, if things had happened, if God had blessed you like you thought he would, you'd become so proud that nobody could have even touched you with a word of advice. And, you know, I think that's right. In fact, I know that's right. You know, if God had blessed me like I wanted him to in those early years, then I would just become so swelled head. And, you know, gang, that our first convert, we started witnessing in July, and our first convert was in April of the next year. And, well, I know what it means to witness, Bible study, and nothing. And we had one guy who became a Christian that year. Was named Pete Perkins. And by the way, he's the best man that I've ever met and worked with in my life. One guy. And he's still with us. He's just a little plum that God says, okay, Chuck, now, just to encourage you a little bit, here's one. And then another guy named Alan Newell was a Christian that was just struggling all, you know, and he got with us. So at the end of the year, we wound up with two guys, two little old flimsy guys. And, you know, Leroy told me later on, he said, I was sharing that with him, he said, you know, as I've looked back over my life, two men per year has just about been the average. He said, so be encouraged, that's just about the average. If you can work all year long and knock your head out and pray like crazy and work them on and come out with two good people, he said, you've had a good year. So I was encouraged by that. But anyway, a couple years later, they transferred us up to the University of California Polytechnic State University up in San Luis Obispo, and we've been there, and we'll be there next year. And after that, who knows? That's a little bit about my history. I made a tremendous amount of mistakes. One of the things I'd like to share with you while we're here is some lessons learned. I've got about 15 of them. When I got to San Luis Obispo, I decided to begin to write down some of these things that God had taught me over the years. And I originally titled them as Valuable Lessons That I Would Like to Pass On to Young Disciples. A guy becomes a Christian, you know, and he begins to grow. And some of the time as I'm working with this guy and trying to help this young guy grow, these are 15 lessons that I really want to get across to these people. And so these are lessons learned. I don't know if we'll have the opportunity to cover them, but I have written them up and typed them up, and we have them as a handout, and we'll give it to you sometime during the next couple of days. the subject that we want to get into this morning is leadership. And some of the things I'd like to cover with you is I'd like to cover with you some basically how to lead. That'll be a couple of sessions on that. Now, if I had a nickname, it'd probably be the Great Plagiarizer, because if I hear somebody that's got something to offer, I'll scarf it up. And a lot of the things that I will share with you today are not my original thinking. It was not stuff that I went out into the ministry and worked out and came up with as a concept or as an idea, and now I can present it to you from firsthand, from the one who brought it into being. Now, see, a lot of this stuff, I got stuff here from Larry Whitehouse and from Leroy and from Dr. Howie Hendricks and Walt Hendrickson and Hurt Dornball. And, man, I don't care where they are, what they said, or at what time. If I heard it and it was good, I wrote it down. And so a lot of the things that I will share with you are not mine originally. What I've done is I've heard them and have tried to implement them and refine them to fit what we're doing at our place, and it's worked. And so I'll share with you some of these things, but I don't want you to get the idea that all this is mine. I remember one time I read in a book, you won't believe this, you might believe this, I was at Louisiana College, and there was this little country church outside of town there that needed a pastor. And so I went out there one time and laid my only sermon on them, and they thought that's, you know, pretty good, so they invited me just to come out and preach every Sunday. So I did what all eager beavers did. I went to the bookstore and got me some books on sermons. You gotta have something to say, and particularly if you don't even know what a quiet time, devotion life, you don't even know what that is, you know, you gotta get it from someplace. And so I remember reading in one of these books, a guy said, when better sermons are written, better sermons will be preached. And, of course, I agree with that because I was eager for them. But, if I can find something in a bookstore or on a tape or something that a man has said, I'll really try to use it. And I don't flinch at the fact that I'm using what someone else has come up with. So, but anyway, we'd like to cover leadership. I got most of this from Dr. Howie Hendricks. By the way, Campus Crusade for Christ puts out, they have a section called the Ministry of Management, and they have a course about, it's about $35, but you can write and get a notebook, and it's got these tapes in it from which this material was drawn. And if you'll you can get that from Campus Crusade from Christ International, the Ministry of Management. It costs you about $35. It's fantastic. I got a copy of it over in my room if you want to look at it. Then we'll get into setting priorities and objectives. And I got my initial thinking on setting objectives was from what's his name up in Chicago, whatever his name is. Who's the navigator up in Chicago? Yeah, Bob Sheffield. What's his name? Bob Sheffield, my good friend. But I got this concept from him in our staff conference one time. He talked about setting objectives for your campus, and I went back and tried that, and it just really helped. And so we've been using that ever since. But we'll talk about setting objectives and setting priorities. Not only ministry objectives, but your own personal objectives. And by the way, one of the things that I did when I got here, so many times, gang, I've gone to a place, and I go there with fantastic intention. Man, I'm going to go there, and I'm going to read this book, and I'm going to memorize it, and I got all these things that I really want to do while I'm at this weekend thing, you know, a week-long thing, like here. You know, I'll be here about 4 or 5 days, and so I came up thinking, man. So I got in my room last night, or the first night I got here, and I didn't get here till about 1 o'clock, and Max is up, and so we fellowshiped about 3. So, but after I went to my room, after that, I wrote out, now, what do I want to do while I'm here? And I sat down and I wrote out 3 things I want to do as far as the Word of God. I want to do 4 things as far as prayer, 2 things in exercise, so much sleep a night, and then I wrote down 5 other things that I wanted to get done while I'm here. And I last night I went and I wrote down an M by the ones that I'd got done. I got down 13 out of the 15 yesterday, Monday, and I wrote an M down. And then, of course, a lot of these are daily, see? They're daily. I want to do these things every day. Memorize a verse today. Pray over my prayer cards today. This type of thing. And I wrote that down because I want to get this done. But it is so hard for me to get anything done unless I've got it down on paper staring me right in the face. And so I have to do that. I am very poor in organization. I am very poorly disciplined. Now, I think the only thing that even pulls me through is I have a tremendous drive. And a lot of times I'll skip sleep or I'll, you know, whatever I'll do to get it done. I have a tremendous drive, but if I were just organized and a little bit disciplined, I could get it done and probably much more in just an 8-hour day, you know. I wouldn't have to stay up late and that type of thing. But this thing about writing down objectives is so fantastic for me. I've got to do it if I'm going to get anything done. But because I'm not what I would consider mentally organized. I'm not a guy who's got it in his head. And, you know, there's some people. I read a book called In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. And in this book, in the family that was murdered, the daughter in the family was described as one who just instinctively knew what she was going to do next. And it would tell her, you know, a girl came over to her house, and she said, what are you going to do this afternoon? And she listed just exactly in order what she was going to do that afternoon. Well, if you're that way, you don't need a list like this. But if you're somebody like me that, you know, I have to get up every morning, I think, let's see, now what? Oh, dress. Oh, yeah. And you know, if you're like that, and then you probably ought to write some of these things down. And then you think I'm kidding. Well, I'll tell you. Another thing I did when I got here is I wrote down, okay, now what am I going to do Monday? And so I wrote down, well, I'm going to write home, and I'm also going to call home. And I've got to get a set of verses prepared. You know, I'm redoing my verse box and reviewing, and so I had to kind of work on it a little bit. And I was going to write up a verse, organize my prayer cards. I want to get some time in the sun. I want to get some time reading, and I want to run, get some exercise. And I wrote those things down, and as I got them done throughout the day, I just kind of scratched them off. And last night I got every one of those things done. But you know, gang, I'm not bragging at all. I'm almost saying that I'm such a cripple that I've got to do that just to walk. That's a crutch to me. And I'm saying that if you're that way, then I would highly recommend that you find out what it would take to help you and tenaciously stick with that. But we'll get into this thing of objectives and priorities and both personal and ministry. Then another thing I'd like to wrap with you about is in the area of your job description. What is my job? Can you write that down? Can you write down what is my job? And by the way, I hope to give you some assignments on this. I hope to say, okay, now tonight, when you go home, I want you to sit down and write down what are your priorities. And I want them in order. And if I come to you and disagree and crossfire, you can defend them scripturally and logically and so forth. You can say, this is, I don't care what you say, is before God, this is what I feel I should do, and in this order. Your priorities. And another thing I'll ask you to do is write down your personal objectives of what, you know, come September 1, what do you want to be doing on a weekly basis, a daily basis, or a monthly basis, or whatever, as far as your own personal development. And I don't know if Scotty ever got into the, you know, Scotty, I think, spoke to you primarily about missions, didn't he? But, you know, if you really want him to blow your mind right out of the tub, then just ask him to speak to you on self-development. Oh, sick. That guy will just, you know, he'll just wipe you out. It'll take you a week to recover. He is tremendous in the area of self-development. Oh, he's a stimulator in that area. But, gang, you're going to have to write down, I want you to write down, what am I going to do as far as developing myself and growing and maturing in the fall? And you need to write that down. I'd recommend you do it a quarter at a time or a semester at a time. We'll also get into a little bit about, a little bit into management. I don't want to hit that too heavy because I don't really feel that you're there yet. Max is. Some of you guys have got two or three places that you're trying, or you got two or three major responsibilities. Maybe Wayne and Carolyn and some of these people. But if you got two or three major responsibilities, big things, then you're going to have to learn some managerial skills. And so we'll get into that just a little bit. I'd like to talk to you about how to form a team. Leroy Ives has got a phenomenal tape out. It's a classic. To me, it's the best thing I have ever heard on ministry teams. Leroy did that maybe 6 or 8, 10 years ago, and it's just nothing has come into that I know about has come to, into being since that time that's even in the same ballpark with Leroy Ives' tape on how to form a team. It is just fantastic. I listened to it coming here and decided to implement a few changes back at Cal Poly next year in relation to our core team. It's really good. And how to form a team, I'd like to get into you a little bit. I'd like to kind of camp out on this one for a little while. But the concept of ministry mentality. The word mentality came into my vocabulary about 3 or 4 years ago when Jim Peterson came up from Brazil and spent about a week with us in California. This concept, this thing of mentality. But basically is, how do you think? What is your mental set, your mental framework from which you view life? You view the ministry, you view your family. What is the framework, the box that it all comes out of? What is your mentality? And I think, gang, that it can possibly be the most valuable thing that you can work on is determining how do I think? What is my mental set? What is the mentality from which I view life, the ministry, people, family, etc., etc.? And we'll talk about that. We're going to camp out on that one just a little bit. Of course, we've got some of these things, lessons learned, I feel would be valuable to share with you because it's just mistakes that I've made. You know, I could spend the rest of the time just listing mistakes that I've made. But don't feel too holy. You probably could too. But by the way, gang, let me just throw this in. Throughout our time, we'll throw some of these by the ways in. But by the way, let me encourage you to write, okay? Put the stuff down on paper. You're walking along and you're just kind of walking to class, or you're stumbling out the campus again, and you think, you know, and you're praying about some things, and all of a sudden something crystallizes in your thinking. Well, I would really encourage you to write that down. And what I did is I stumbled on this. I got this from somebody, probably. But I'd get a file folder and called New Projects or New Ideas, and I just throw it in there. And I would just write it down and kind of a little bit of what caused me to learn that, or some verses on it that I thought of, and I just throw it in there. And, you know, after a while, gang, these things begin to crystallize and form a pattern, and you begin to learn principles and concepts out of this stuff. And what is happening is God is teaching you line upon line, precept upon precept. He's teaching you about life. But I just fear so many people are going through life and they're not catching it. It comes in, they think about it, that's really good, but in a year from now, it'd be very difficult for them to resurrect that. So I'd really encourage you to write stuff down and just throw it in a file folder or something, and occasionally go through this stuff and read through it and refresh yourself, and maybe you can see certain them fit together and you can crystallize it into a concept. And see, that becomes you. That's you. And you know, Gotham talks about, what's that thing he talks about, building your life message or something? And, well, see, I think that's part of it, just building your life message. You. Another thing that I want to get into you with is these case studies. Now, I had more fun writing these things up. Well, in fact, I didn't write them up. But I had a girl. We have a girl there who's a journalism graduate, has her master's in journalism. And I gave her the thought and had her write these things up. And we had a ball doing this. But Roberta Veit is a girl that wrote those. She's a kick. These are actually things that I've run into. And what I did is I adapted them from the Navigators into a BSU situation. I'm going to give them to you and tell you to come up with a solution. Let me read you one. This first one's on how to get along with a girl's worker that's not really with you. Gentlemen, I know. By the way, I have just a fantastic privilege of working with a girl on our campus who is so totally with us that it is hard to distinguish the guys and the gals. There is no distinction. It's just the ministry. You know, it's just a game. There is no girls working in a guy. No, there's none of that stuff. It's just a gang, you know. And it's, you know, it reminds me of just what you guys have here. You know, there is no demarcation or that, well, now Carolyn's got her thing and then Max is, you know, Wayne's. There's none of that stuff, you know. It's just a gang. You know, it's just a ministry. And I'll tell you, that is a pure blessing. That doesn't always happen. But anyway, the first one's on that. How to work with a girl. That, you know, what do you do if you got a girl that's not really with you? And here's a guy that just punted. Beautiful. Here's a couple of guys that transfer into your place from another BSU. You know, they've been working, so they transfer over to your school. And boy, this guy writes in, they're fantastic guys. They get over there, and so you give them a major responsibility, and they're duds. And then what do you do? Very interesting. Here's a guy, now I've got you in the role of a state BSU director. And so you get this new BSU director that comes to one of your campuses, and I say he's an Aggie, because that would really fit. But as far as know-how of the job, he's well-equipped to direct the basic campus ministry. However, he is not sharp in his personal appearance. He uses very poor English, speaks too rapidly to be clearly understood, and just kind of generally blows it in the area of public relations. So throughout the year, he's unable to develop close relationships with the local pastors and congregation because of these external qualities. Now, inside, he's a jewel. He's a good man, but externally, he stinks, you know. Pastors view him as unattractive and incompetent, and so the community support is very poor. Now, what do you do? That's a neat one. I had that happen, you know. Ah, here's the jewel. You are facing a conflict with the pastor of your sponsoring church. Love it. He tells you that church members are critical of the way that you are operating the campus BSU ministry. Your standards for discipleship are too high and too exclusive. Gotta love it. Your budget is too high. Your team members are so involved in the campus ministry that they do not take time for some of the weekly youth group activities, such as Bible study, prayer meetings, and youth choir. You fail to see the importance of tying in with the total ministry of your local church. Basically, you are placing so much emphasis on reaching the non-Christians and on discipling the young Christians on campus that you are neglecting the fellowship activities of the church youth group. You firmly believe your convictions regarding the development of discipleship, of disciples, and the operation...